This is an ABC podcast.
This is Neat and Footy with Sam Wykes and Jinida Arona on ABC Radio Australia.
Ta lofa lava to our Samoan audience and welcome everyone to Neat and Footy, the best spot for Pacifica footy news and stories in the rugby league and rugby union worlds. My name is Tinirau Aruna, and alongside me each week is my Tongan brother, Sammy Wykes. Happy Monday, brother.
Happy Monday, and happy Father's Day for yesterday, T.
Thanks, mate. Happy Father's Day to yourself all the fathers across the Pacific.
How'd you celebrate, mate?
How did I celebrate, mate? Just a ticket to the grand final.
That's what I set it up for you. There it is.
So we've,
You and the boys are in the grand final this week.
To give a bit of background, Penrith Junior Rugby League, we played our finals and I played for St. Clair Comets and we'll be playing Windsor Wolves, my brother Daniel Arona, playing his team next week in
the
grand
final.
So
this will be the true Arona Cup, this one, this Sunday.
Yes, there is. This will be the one.
Absolutely love that. Absolutely love that. But that news aside, a NRL finals is here. Plenty of juicy matchups everywhere you look. But we will go through the games of the last round. You'll cover that. Pacific Nations Cup, we saw Fiji. All the Tongans are thinking Fiji at the moment because they beat Manu Samoa. And now Tonga have officially qualified for the World Cup. And we'll unpack that game. And the Women's Rugby World Cup also reached the next phase. And we'll talk through how Fijiana went in their game against Wales and also Manusina. And, plenty to get through today, T. Big show.
Yep, and we've also got a special guest with us today who we'll be having a chat with. His name is Jack DeBreezy.
DeBreezy.
All right, here for all our listeners.
Chris Breezy.
Jack DeBreezy. His last name is spelled DeBreezy. And fun fact, he's Cook Islander.
He's a Cook Islander, yeah.
Man. How do you get that? I couldn't even say his last name.
You know, the funny thing is we get all our Pacific Island last names like Nawanganitawase down packed, and then when we get that one, it's like, ooh, how do we pronounce that one? But yeah, Jack DeBreezy, I've actually known him for a very long time, him and his family, and I only found out after the Pacifica First Nations Lions game, a couple of months ago, when he got selected, and I was like, man, what? How did this guy get in there? He's Māori and South American, turns out, Cook Islander. So I got on after the game, asked him straight away, chances of jumping on Neesian footy? Said, no doubt. And here we are, my friend. We got him on.
Keen as to hear his story. So let's get straight into the show, Sammy.
Moment of the week.
Yes, we were just talking about Cook Islanders. And over the weekend, we had a special moment for a Cook Island family, the Takairangis. Now, we know Kiana Takairangi. She's been on our show. And she just made her NRLW debut for the Parramatta Eels. So she's played NRLW, but her club debut, Parramatta Eels, was over the weekend. Cool thing about this moment was that not only has her brother, Brad Takairangi, represented the Parramatta Eels as well, so has their father, Louis Takairangi. So, big family moment for the Takairangi family over the weekend.
I believe it's the first ever father-son-daughter combination to play ever for NRL club or NRLW club. So it is a huge occasion for the Takairangi family, and we get to hear from her father now.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. I think it's great that Kiana gets to sort of follow in the footsteps of her father. I'm going to chuck it over to him anyway because I know he doesn't want to speak, but he's got
And it's the best Father's Day present.
Yeah, lovely human, lovely family. That was Brad, and then passing over the mic to her father, Louis. So congratulations to Kiana. I know she's been working hard, and she also scored a try against the Salas West Tigers.
Oh, did you tip Para?
I tipped the Eels.
You did tip
I was with
Eels.
Sulla on Saturday. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I was with Sulla on Saturday night too.
Was she confident?
And she goes, you tipped the Eels, didn't you? And I go, yep.
Well, it was a sure thing because it was a hiding, I'm pretty sure.
My name's Paul Aiton, head coach of the PNG Hunters. You're listening to Nugent Footy.
Yeah, Paulie Aiton, the man himself. But, T, let's get into some rugby league news from the weekend.
Mate, what about the NRL regular season has finished?
Can't believe it.
How fast has that gone? Yeah, it only seemed like a couple of weeks ago.
We're 27 talking. Weeks of footy.
It just feels so fast, eh? But anyway, there was a few big moments over the weekend. I know we had a lot of teams playing for positions and playing not to stay at the bottom, but my first moment here has to go to a record, an NRL record, where James Fisher-Harris, for the Warriors, captain of the New Zealand Warriors, he now holds the record for the fastest NRL try scored with 8 seconds.
Gorgeous conditions here at Brookie. That's the whistle of referee Todd Smith and the Warriors kick off. A Warriors team trying to desperately get into some form before a cutthroat final. The kickoff, oh my word! It's a try to the Warriors after a bounce evaded Cherry Evans and Saab, and James Fisher-Harris has caught the ball and scored off the kickoff. That is bizarre! That is absolutely gobsmacking. Dino, say something.
Oh my God, we're going to have to go to the record books. That's got to be the fastest try that I've ever seen in the NRL. And
It was the fastest in the NRL, but the record is actually held in the Super League with 7 seconds.
7 seconds.
There was a winger that sprinted down and got the ball as it bounced.
Can you imagine that, though? Looking in the history books, say, because I don't reckon that's going to be broken again for a front rower. But just knowing full well that 20 years down the track, the fastest try scorer was a front rower, James Fisher-Harris.
And he can say, not only have I won four comps, I've also scored the fastest try.
So absolutely.
Unfortunately, the Warriors did lose this one 26-27. It was a big farewell for Manly halfback Daly Cherry Evans. But Warriors still will play this weekend in the finals. Now, last Friday, we spoke about the Roosters taking on the Souths, all eyes on them, and the Roosters put it to bed on Friday and locked their spot in the top eight with a win over the Bunnies, 36-6. Unfortunately, again, no tries for PNG flyer Alex Johnston, so he'll have to wait for next season to break the all-time try-scoring record, but Roosters Fijian Australian Mark Nawanganitewase, he just seems to get better every week, and this week he scores another three tries, making him the NRL's 2025 top try scorer with 23 tries.
He's three shy. Last play, Roosters. Do they go short side left? Yes, they do. Watson, Tedesco, to Tupou. He was slowed down all the way back here. 20 out, Walker. Up goes the crossfield bomb. They'll leap on into Laza over the top. Easy as you like. Plucked it out of the air and scored. He beat Johnston again to complete his hat trick. Mark Nawanitewase, what a night, what a player, what a season.
Damn.
T, how good, eh? I'm so happy for him. Honestly, genuinely happy for him.
Are you happy for the game of rugby league?
I am, because it's entertaining him, but it just still breaks me that he should be scoring three tries for the Wallabies during this rugby championships. And
Maybe we'll see him score three for the Kangaroos, and you know, same but different. the Hammer, Hamiso Tabuai-Fido, he finished second on the try scoring list for this season with 22 tries. He also scored three tries in the Dolphins' win, 62-24 over the Raiders. Now the Roosters will now play the Sharks in week one of the finals. Winner goes through, loser is eliminated. The Sharkies, that's my other game. They've been flying under the radar. They had a dominant win over the Bulldogs, winning 24-6. Sam, when you look at the Bulldogs' form over the last couple of weeks, is it concerning signs for the Doggies who play the Storm this week? Again, both teams will get a chance, but when you look at the Bulldogs, their run throughout the season, but then the way that they've dipped at the end, What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I guess you always want to take form going into finals footy. And when you look at the Roosters, I feel like they are taking form into finals footy, but they were chasing from the bottom. But the way the Dogs started and the way they got through pretty much over halfway in the competition, they were sitting towards the top of the table. And to drop a game like that, and when you talk about defence, like you always say, finals footy, this is where defence really kicks in. I think that is a little bit concerning to leak 24 points, but they've probably got the players and the leadership to be able to turn things around in a week.
Yeah, you're right. And we'll touch on the finals format shortly, but the Tigers, last week we spoke about, so Tigers have had the wooden spoon the last few years, and we spoke last Friday about the Titans and the Knights battling out for this year's wooden spoon. The Tigers had a comfortable lead at halftime over the Titans. They were leading with 28 points to 12, tries to Jareem Buller, Latu Fainu, and two for Samoan Royce Hunt, and a try to the kid that you mentioned last Friday on his NRL debut, Hemasi Makasini.
Saifar out to Latu Fainu, gives it away to his older brother. Pass comes out right now for the man on his debut, and Makasini goes in to score. What a way to start your NRL career. 18 years of age from Newington College. Amazing, doing his HSC. They get around him. What a great moment for him.
But the Titans fighting to get off the bottom of the ladder, turning things around in the second half, scoring four unanswered tries. Jaden Campbell kicking 6 from 6, and the Titans snatch the win 36-28. So this sets us up for Sunday, the last game of the regular round, which meant the Knights had to beat the Eels in the last match to give the wooden spoon back to the Titans. Again, the Knights. The Knights, they struggled. The Eels were on fire, scoring 12 tries in total to the Knights 2. Eels just thrashing the Knights 66 points to 10. The Eels finished at 11th, strong finish to the year. You can see what Jason Rolls is trying to do with the rebuild of the club, of the team, and it's good that they get to finish the season on a positive, but the Knights, they unfortunately take the wooden spoon home. When you look at the bottom eight, Sammy, what surprises you? You know, we spoke about at the start of the year, we gave our predictions. Talk to me, what team in the bottom eight do you think, well, maybe I would have expected them to be in the top eight?
Even though I did tip them to come last in our very first episode was the Dolphins.
That's right.
That's, I did, but I guess the way that they played throughout the year, I guess their attack was just on fire. You know, just seeing the Kaz Isaac Arthur, the way he was connecting well with his 5'8", with his outside men, and he was just picking the right option every single time. So his try assist, I'm sure he was leading the way with try assist. I thought their attack was on fire and they were in the top eight for the bulk of the season. For them to drop out, it was in their fate. I reckon it was probably like that's the one that I probably would have loved to have seen in there just because of the fact that it was in their hands to be able to, you know, close off a few of those last games to be able to jump in there, but still some positive signs for them for next year.
Yeah, look, I think the Cowboys was my surprising team in the bottom eight. When you just look at that roster, you look at the players like Tom Dearden, who was unreal in the State of Origin, got Player of the Series, Reece Robson, Scott Drinkwater, surrounded by some of their big men as well, like Jason Taumalolo. You'd expect that they'd be fighting for top eight positions. But look, I think that's they'll just have to do better next year.
Yes, plain and simple.
And look, this weekend we do have the finals. Now the Storm will be taking on the Dogs and the Raiders will be taking on the Broncos. All four of those teams will get a chance, so if they do lose, they'll still play the week after. But the elimination games are Warriors versus the Panthers, that game being played in New Zealand, and the Sharkies versus the Roosters, the Aroma Cup. That's those four teams, loser, out, winner, continues on to the next round. And just speaking on the Broncos, I know last week on Friday I said that the Broncos played at Melbourne on that Thursday night. It was actually they played at Brisbane because
you're too busy worried about stitching me up about Penrith resting players, and I got done and dusted in my tipping comp. So that's why.
But I also seen Cook Island legend and Broncos legend, Alex Glenn. He was running up and down the sideline when Broncos scored that try, and he even joined in on the player celebration. So apologies for that one. And remember, you can hear every NRL game live on ABC Radio Australia. And on the finals, make sure you tune in on Nijin Footy on Friday, where we'll get more of a detailed breakdown and preview of these eight teams taking on one another in the NRL finals. NRLW, there is no Shelley, so let's look at the second last round of the NRLW, Sammy. Look, the game of the round was the Knights versus the Titans in Newcastle with just 2 minutes to go. Jesse Selfwell scores a try and converts to win the game for the home team and lock in their finals for 2025. It means that five out of the top six spots are locked in. We have the Roosters, Broncos, Cowboys, Sharks, and the Knights. Speaking of the Bulldogs, though, the Sharks, they lost to the Bulldogs 24-14. Big shout out to Simina Lokotui and also Shannon Muru, who both scored tries for the Bulldogs. Good signs for them and their coach, Braden. Now, we mentioned the five out of the top six are locked in, but the final spot will either be the Titans or the Eels. The Titans play the Raiders. They've improved across the season, and the Eels, they'll play the Bulldogs, who are coming off that Sharks win that I just mentioned. A big final round too, with Sharks playing the Roosters and the Broncos playing the Cowboys. Any news? How are you going with your NRLW? You've been keeping up to date?
Yeah, all over. I've just seen the Tigers lost again. So they're holding up are they the wooden spooners again? Sulla?
Yeah.
Sorry, should we laugh? I shouldn't laugh.
I shouldn't laugh
at someone's pain, but that's how much I've been keeping up to date. But I've got plenty of news for the Rugby World Cup for the women, so that's my space.
We will get to that shortly. But in the Queensland Cup, we have the PNG Hunters. They went down in the elimination final against the Redcliffe Dolphins on the weekend. So that's their season done. Unlucky to the Hunters. They lost 32-12 with Douglas David getting a double for PNG and another try to Sonny Wabor, who finished the season as their top try scorer.
T, you've done an amazing job, but we've still got one more bit of rugby league news, and I'll cover you here because I know you've done an amazing job filling in for Shelley there. I just want to give a big shout out to the finalists of the PNG Rugby League comp, which will take place this Sunday. In the men's, it'll be the Lay Tigers, Justin Olam's old club. They will take on the Murrooks, and in the women's, it will be the Central Debari versus the Gorica Lehanis. So, big games in PNG this Sunday, my friend.
Oh, you've been to PNG, eh?
Yeah, I've got to give up. I've got to make sure the listeners know that we love them as well. They love us. So
what happens when you go to, say, Solomon Islands and then you come back? Are we just going to stick to Solomon Islands footy?
Absolutely. Their biggest sport is football, soccer.
So then when we go to the Cook Islands, so how do we get to the Cook Islands?
I don't know. Well, bosses, anyone listening, we've got to go very soon. But hey, all done for rugby league?
All done, mate. Over to rugby union.
All right, let's get over to rugby union. And Manu Samoa hosted the Flying Fijians in New Zealand. Fiji ended up winning 29-15, but they had to fight their way back to get this game and get the win. And T, from Friday, do you remember what Nems' analysis was on how the Fijians would have had to beat Samoa if they were to win? Do you remember it?
Was it around physicality?
Spot on. Absolutely spot on. And his analysis was spot on because he talked about physicality. He talked about it will be close up until about the 60th minute and then Fiji will run away with it. And that's exactly happened.
That's how
it played out. Samoa got out to a 15-5 lead early on and they held that lead. They held that 15 points right up until about the 60-minute mark. And it was tight.
I actually know that. You know why I know that?
Why?
Because you messaged me when they were up 15-5. Oh, yeah. And you're like, Manu Samoa winning.
I thought Fiji were going to win by 30. So I was like, man, my tip's already gone. So Samoa, they got off to a great start. And what I loved about Samoa's performance, I feel like they knew how to play them. And that physicality aspect was probably the theme for their week because they went through them with their rolling more at scrum time and they put a lot of pressure on their – Clint, was that a fart?
Nah, just kicked the chair behind me. So
I thought you just lift the leg up and ripped one there, the whole leg. But anyway, let's get back to the rugby news here. Went through them at scrum time as well, drew some penalties, and they scored a try off a rolling Moore. And one of the things I was really impressed with was their carry and clean outs, the way that they probably, I reckon, changed their shape a little bit. They started a little bit tighter, so the cleaners could get faster in the clean out. There was a number eight, Jacopo Mapu. He is an absolute beast, man. He's like UT. It's your size, but just probably about 10 kilos
wider, thicker. So like a short, thicky.
Yeah, thick top
dude.
Of bloke yeah. That's fast. So everything
like,
opposite to you.
Like
but he's an absolute machine. And I really thought his ball carry and his presence really helped Samoa get on the front foot. And what was also pretty evident as well around what Samoa did is they really attacked Fiji's attacking breakdown. So if you remember back, every time we talk about Fiji, they love to win the breakdown with like one or two cleanouts so they can have more men on their feet, and that's how they like to play to get to width. As soon as Samoa only saw one or two in the cleanout, sealing the ball over, they flooded that ruck and they got a couple of good turnovers. So yeah, they just flooded that breakdown and they got some crucial turnovers, and they were able to go up 15-5 after about 35 minutes, and they had a lead at half time. But Fiji found a way to come back. They scored some points through some great efforts from Seta Tamanivalu, Kuravoli, their halfback, and Ravovo, their winger. And I'll say, although it wasn't as free-flowing and probably the game that we love to watch, how we like to watch the Fijians play, I think they should be very proud of the efforts, how they had to find a new way to win. They didn't panic. So you've been in those situations, eh? Like when you've got a certain style of footy, and when that style of footy gets taken away from you, you've got to find a new way to win, yeah? Like, have you been in those situations before?
Yeah, I was in that situation yesterday.
Oh, yeah. That's why you guys were down 16 points,
weren't
you?
Yeah, down 16 points. But, it's about being patient, but they're having that moment to change the momentum.
Yep.
And finding that one moment, whether it's a big hit, whether it's a try, getting on the scoreboard, but then what that moment does, it builds confidence within that team.
Yeah, spot on, man. Use the key word there was patience. That's exactly what they had to do. They had to be patient and they had to understand that there was scoreboard pressure and the clock was winding down and they needed to just say back what they're doing and the tries will come. And that's what happened. And they won that game in the end. And what I loved about that game, what was probably my favorite moment of that game, is after it, the camera panned to the hill. And there was this lone Tongan person with his Tongan flag up there waving it around. He was happy because that meant now Tonga have qualified for the 2027 Rugby World Cup.
Wait, how did that work?
Because it was these are all qualifying matches.
Yeah, yeah.
And because the top two of the pool in the Pacific Nations for both sides, A and B, go through.
And
so Fiji finished on top, and because Tonga beat Samoa. Samoa was left on no wins for their pool. So now Fiji are on top. Tonga finished second. And then in the other pool, it was Japan and Canada.
So if Samoa won, would it go on for and against?
Yeah, it would have went on for and against to see what would have happened there. So
wow.
That was big. Yeah, there was a lot on the line there. And shout out to the guy, the Tongan fellow on the hill, who managed to prepare and take his flag.
But Samoa can still qualify.
Yeah, they can still qualify. Yeah, yeah. They'll have to go through the
different pathway.
How do you say it? Repertoire.
I don't know, is that it?
I've got no idea.
Can you spell it? Spell what you're trying to say.
Spell Debrasini again.
That Cook Island bloke.
That Cook Islander. Oh, I can't spell. So that's all good. But just to round out the Pacific Nations Cup, Samoa play USA in fifth place playoff. Tonga will verse Japan in one of the semifinals. And Japan finished top of Pool B. Fiji will play against Canada in the other semifinal. And then both winners will play each other in the final to decide the winner of the Pacific Nations Cup for 2025. So good stuff there from all the teams.
Fiji strong favourites?
I think so. But all these games are going to be played in the US, so neutral ground. So that'll be interesting to see how Fiji travels. and just see how that one unfolds. But what I can definitely guarantee is running rugby. That'll be a fast game. That'll be a fast game, especially with the way the Japanese play. But with no Shelley, I'll cover the Women's Rugby World Cup. Fijiana finished up with a tight win over Wales, 28 points to 25.
Yeah, get that up, yo, all the Fijian.
I was just about to say that.
Critics,
yes,
that have been giving it to our Fijiana woman. And they come away for a big win over the Welsh.
Over Wales.
28 to 25. Get that in ya.
Couldn't have said it any better. But, you know, after all the keyboard warriors out there, and this meant so much to that team. Like, the way that they celebrated was if they won the World Cup. You know, they jumped on each other. They were high-fiving. There was tears. And it didn't come without, I guess, moments in the game where they got out to a really good start, though. So they were up 28 points for like at half time there, and didn't score a point in the second half. And Wales started to come back. So I think that's why the emotions were sky high, because they clawed their way back and scored on the bill. And I love that the king of sevens, Sarivi, was in the crowd. Man, he had tears in his eyes, and he had some really, really nice things to say about being there and being there for that game.
For me, it's like it's huge, because I represent all the parents that didn't came out to watch their kids playing today. That's the reason why I was there, to welcome them and represent all the fans, all their families first, and then all the fans in Fiji. That's the reason I was there, to support them coming off the bus, giving them some energy to know that they have been supported by my presence there. Oh, I was so emotional when they did that. I believe they need energy coming out of the bus and seeing someone there as a father figure to all of them. I believe that's the most important thing that they need before heading to the changing room and playing today.
And for Wales, there was actually a Tongan try scorer as well, Cecilia Tuipulotu. She scored a pick and go try for Wales. So it's good to see that our Nijan sisters have been represented in other teams as well. When we look at Manusina, they lost their final game against the US 60 points to nil, but they keep winning the hearts of everyone, because they are probably the vibe of the competition. So after every game, even though they've lost, they grab the opposition and they just have a dance off in the middle of the field after the game. So they're winning the hearts of everyone at that competition. And the Wallaroos lost 47 points to 7 to England, who are the top rated team in the world. But it meant they finished with a better for and against than USA. So they go through to the finals, and the Wallaroos will play Canada in the quarterfinals.
Is that it for Union?
That is it for Rugby Union.
Oh, well, because you got a bit of piece of Rugby League, I've got some for Rugby Union. I want to give a big shout-out to...
What have you got here? This isn't on the run sheet.
Artie Savia.
Oh, yeah.
Just the socials that I got to watch over the weekend, playing his 100th All Black game. What an achievement, and just the way that man leads and speaks. And I know Rico Ioane had his words about him as a leader on and off the field.
Firstly, I just want to congratulate you on 100 tests. I know how important this milestone has been for you, and what's amazing for us boys is not so much the man that you are on the field, but the leader and the pioneer you are off it. I think your endeavours and your leadership off field are more strong than on field, and we know what a player you are on field, so that's a huge statement, and compliments to you, my brother. I know Sas, Kobe, Cove and Keon will be super proud, and as we are a team of you, bro. I have nothing but admiration. You know, you are a pioneer. You're one of the greatest to ever do it, and still so young, and still got a lot more games left. Also, the boys are proud of you. We love you, and congratulations, brother.
I just want to pay my, you know, give a big shout out to Artie, because I still have faith that we'll get him here on Nijan Footy. So if you are listening, much love from everyone here on Nijan Footy.
I agree, mate, and that's the theme for Gimme Three, so just keep that in your mind, okay?
Oh, you're good, mate.
Just you keep that in your good mind for Gimme Three when we get there. And with no Shelley, let's get straight to Jack Debrasidi.
Bula, my name is Vani Are. You're listening to Nijan Footy. What's up, ABC Radio Australia listeners? I'm Sosafina Formoli, and I want you to come hang with me for On The Record, your weekly deep dive into the music that moves the Pacific. We'll talk about the big tracks that inspire your favourite Pacific music artists and the real stories behind them. Plus, we'll uncover some gems that you might not know yet, keeping the heart of the Pacific alive and thumping. Catch On The Record Mondays at 3 p.m. PNG time on ABC Radio Australia.
It's Nation Footy with Sam Wykes and Tinida Arona.
Well, I tell you, you should be very happy with our guest today because we have a fellow Cookie rugby union player on for the first time in a very long time. Our guest for today, I've actually known him and his family for I reckon about 20 years, and I only found out he was Cookie when he was selected in the First Nations and Pacifica team to play against the Lions a couple of months ago. And
so this year.
So I've known him for that long. And
I'm actually keen to hear what nationality you thought he was.
I will get to that. Maldi. I thought his mum was Maldi. I don't know. But anyway, so after the game, went straight to him and said, hey, great game, but chances of coming on the show. And here we are. We've got him on. He's had a solid rugby career so far. Debuted back in 2014 with the Melbourne Rebels. He's played for the Chiefs over in New Zealand in Super Rugby. He's played in Japan. He's played for the Brumbies. And after saying he was going to retire after that First Nations and Pacific Lions game, he told me he was going to retire as well. And then I wake up maybe a few days ago, I see headline news from the New South Wales Waratahs. Jack Debrasini has signed for 2026, and here he is joining us now. Welcome to Nation Footy, brother. It's good to have you.
Thank you very much. That's a great interaction.
That's what we do here. We try to bounce off each other, just not have the stereotype of intro. But, Jackie boy, what's happened in the last 2 months to say that the real world wasn't for you?
Yeah, I remember we had that chat in that hotel in Melbourne, came home, was still pretty adamant on it. I think because I was only going to play in Sydney, because my wife lives here and works here. So to me, there was no other option outside of Sydney, and there's only one team in Sydney. there wasn't really any conversation. So I guess my career was essentially done. I was looking to enter the real world. And then, a feeler came out from the Tars about potentially playing for a year, and then probably came to the reality that I wasn't ready for the real world, and now jump back into another season of rugby. So here we are.
What's your thoughts on playing for the Tars next year? Was it ever part of your plans, or when you look at your career as a whole, what's it like knowing that you're going to be landing at the Tars next for 2026?
When I was young, it was always to play for the Tars, being from Sydney, going to Waratahs games and being in different pathways. And then you go away for 12 years, and you're sort of the Tars are the enemy and you wanted to beat them every time. And there was a bit of chip on your shoulder to play well against a team, I guess, that didn't pick you up to start your career. But now coming full circle, it's pretty exciting to be back in the home state. I was telling my wife the other day, it'd be good that family and friends can come watch me for more than one game a year when you come and play the Tars at home. So no, it's exciting. It's sort of come full circle moment. So yeah, it's going to be a weird feeling walking into headquarters day one.
I'll ask Sammy. Did you think he was New Zealand Māori this last 20 years?
Yeah, well, I thought his mum, beautiful, die. I thought the family was Māori. I don't know why. I didn't have an inkling it was Cookie at all. And let's go into your Cookie heritage. What do you know about your Cookie side?
Yeah, so Nan is from Titikavaka, around the Takatima tribe in Raro. Her house is still there. It's about 10 metres from the coral side. Beautiful place, part of the world. I've used to go quite a bit when we were younger during school holidays. Yeah, and so I've always been grown. When I go back to New Zealand to see my nan, that's where she lives, was always raised around Rarotonga cultures and foods and way of living. So, yeah, it's a proud part of my heritage. It's one of four heritages. That's probably why you probably never knew about it, because I try to juggle all four of them. But yeah, very proud to be from Rarotonga and from the Cook Islands.
Sammy, where's the rugby league team there? What's their logo? You know
what, the
Titikavaka.
No, I've only know the two Papa Panthers and the Arirangi Bears.
Well, Titicavica Bulldogs, mate.
Oh, the Bulldogs.
Yes.
There we go.
The Bulldogs. Funny story, actually. I went to Titicavica College for, I think it was 2 days.
Did you?
Yeah. And then I wanted to go back home, so mum flew me back to New Zealand. So I lasted 2 days. But what you mentioned three out of the heritages. What's your background?
The last name comes from Hungary. Debrezeni. So my dad's dad is Hungarian. My dad's mum, my grandma on my dad's side, is from Chile in South America. And then my mum's dad is, I guess, White Pakeha from New Zealand.
There you go. It's a mixed bag there. How good is that? So how do you juggle all four of those cultures?
You sort of just dip in when you're around those different cultures. When I'm around the South American people, I'm Chilean. When I'm around the Hungarian, around the Islanders, I'm Rarotongan. So you sort of lean into every culture.
How's your Cook Island dance? How's your hula?
I did my first proper dance like 2-3 years ago. Sam would know at West Harbour, my local junior club. We have a big culture night, big Pacifica Islander family down there. So one of the Cook Islands boys, Justin Masters, brother.
Ash's brother, yep.
He's like, you're doing it. There was some scary weeks there in front of the mirror trying to get the knee shot and get him in tune, but it was actually one of the best things I've ever done. It took me outside my comfort zone, and I loved it. So yeah, they're still a bit shaky, but I'd like to think they're better than when I started a couple of years ago.
The calf strength, the stamina, coordination, man, it is actually a pretty hard dance.
I've got no doubt. I want to stay there for a bit, just on, you know, when you talk about cultural identity and belonging. Again, we've had this conversation many times on Nijan Footy. You know, when you've got different cultural backgrounds, sometimes you're a bit shy to go towards the cultural aspects, like dancing or like trying to speak the language. How nervous were you around learning that Cook Island dance and then performing it on the night?
I think it was when I was a lot younger. I used to not lean into my different cultures quite a bit. I think I always felt in every different one I was, because I wasn't fully 100% Rarotongan, Chilean, Hungarian, I was like not ashamed, but I just was a bit standoffish to ever lean into any of them. And I think as you grow and get mature, you start to realize that's what makes you unique. It's okay if you're 1% to 100%. You are a percentage. That is your bloodline. That is your heritage. So lean into it as much as you can. So yeah, at the start, I wasn't too nervous learning the dance. But as the weeks went on and we got closer to performance, and I guess the bright lights come on. Yeah, it was nerve wracking, but you just sort of have to dive head in first and go full 100%. And came out the other side exhilarated, and I probably could run for a brick wall after I finished. So I was full of energy and excitement. So, yeah, a lot of nerves to begin with.
Yeah, bring up a good point there. It's, you know, whether it's 1% or 100%, we've got a saying, you know, here on Nijan Footy, if you've got Cook Island blood or if you've got Tongan blood, you are Cook Islander. So just speaking on behalf of my own half Australian, half Cook Island sons, and just bringing up that awareness of like you are, you know, that you are Cook
Absolutely.
Island as well. You yep. are Australian as well, and you can acknowledge both, you know, all your nations that you're a part of. Were you ever asked to represent the Cook Islands of rugby union?
Yeah, maybe like, I'm going to say like before maybe the 2015 World Cup, they were trying, I think, to make qualifications and there was potential to link up with them. The only issue is it fell around the time I was talking to some teams in Japan, and how Sam will tell you, once you get capped,
yeah,
changes the whole dynamic in Japan around contracting. So I decided not to do it, but I'd be open to it if it ever came up again now.
When so that cap draw, as soon as you become internationally capped, now you're competing with the All Blacks players that want to go to Japan, South Africans, Wallabies.
Also, if you don't have an international cap,
yeah, you can have a certain amount of foreigners on the field at the time. Yeah. And that was a big part of the reason why, you know, I had to say no to Tonga. You know, when they asked me to make myself available for selection.
Yeah.
The financial reward of being in Japan was just far too great compared to if you got capped, because you're just like, nah, we don't want you anymore. So it is one of those decisions that you have to make, and hopefully, like in your situation, maybe you can come around again and you can have a crack. But your rugby journey, you know, you debuted with the Melbourne Rebels, and I still found it so weird, like when we played against each other, I think it was NRC before that first Super Rugby season, and we played you down there in Melbourne.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you guys were putting on a clinic on everyone until the Western Force came in and had to stop that momentum and knock you guys out of the semis. But yeah, how do you, now that you've had 10 years, how do you reflect on your career so far, knowing that it's still going, but how do you look back on the last 10 years?
I reflect in my career in different ways. There's a bit of regret the way I went about a few things, how I handled some situations, particularly in Melbourne. But it's part of the journey. I've come out a better player. I understand my game a lot better the last 4 or 5 years. Early on, I battled with how I wanted to play or how I thought people wanted me to play. And I wasn't strong enough to back my own abilities to stick into my guns and what my strengths were. And that took time to learn that. So, yeah, it's a journey. It's been a journey, but I wouldn't change anything really.
Yeah, just on that, like for people that might not know you, like you're quite a tall fly half, and I mean this with the utmost respect as well. You're not ripped up or like athletic, because I'm not throwing stones at a glass ceiling.
Same rig as Sammy then.
Body like a melted wheelie bin. Nah, he's got me covered there. But obviously, like you worked hard on your craft around your kicking game, your game IQ and stuff. So what were coaches looking for in you that where they wanted to change your style of game?
I don't think it was much, like a little bit, not really coaches. It was more... when I was at the Rebels, the 10s were Quade, Nard, Tamua, Christian. They were all like runners.
Yep.
Or like, I guess your term attacking fly halves, especially in Australia. And I was a young fly half, but I was more of a kicker, game manager. And I felt like people wanted me, or the crowd wanted me, or people in Melbourne wanted me. They hated when I kicked. We weren't going too well in some years and we'd get booed. And it threw me off that. So I almost hated kicking. And I hated using my, I guess, strength. And it wasn't until later, like a few years down the track, reflection in Japan, I was just like, well, that's my strength. That's how I control games. But yeah, early on, it probably threw me off a bit. I was trying to be like those other 10s in Australia because they were the best 10s in Australia.
Mm.
And I was a young guy coming through trying to find my way. And I felt like my skill set wasn't really that respected in Australian rugby. So I wanted to change that.
Mate, it's such a good point that you bring up around playing to your strengths. You know what I mean? People want to pigeonhole you into playing a certain style of way, but your strengths is your strengths. That's what got you there in the first place. So that's what you should stick to as well. And then you add other bits and pieces later. So it's actually very, I think it's very refreshing that you can actually look back at that as a place of learning and then go, you know what, I can go back to my strengths. And you still got plenty of legs to go because you've got another season in the old legs. But yeah, you've played around the globe now, Japan. You played in the Barbarians Invitational. But I want to take you to that First Nations Pacifica game, you know, to face the Lions a couple of months ago. Firstly, how did you find out that you were selected for that team?
Tana reached out to me. There was a couple of boys, Indigenous boys, who were asking some questions about where I was, if I had any Pacific Islander background, and I told them yes, I did. And then Tana reached out and asked if I would be keen to come play. And of course, I jumped at the opportunity, especially to play another game against the Lions, but to be able to represent my nan, who's the only, I guess, grandparent I have alive still. I thought it was a pretty cool moment to try represent her and my Cook Islander heritage. So, yeah, it was a text or phone call from Tana.
Speaking of your name, what's the family last name?
All Papa. So I think my great-great-grandfather travelled from Tahiti by boat. But, yep. Yeah, last name's Old Papa.
And what was your grandmother's reaction when you told her you're playing in this game?
Yeah, I think she was stoked, especially when Mum was sending pics through around like my name with the Cook Island flag and a couple of the patterns that have sprayed out through the week. Yeah, she was ecstatic.
Awesome. Yeah, when you play for that type of purpose and you're preparing for a game like that, what's it like, that feeling that you're putting your culture and heritage first to represent them and represent someone like your nan? What's that feeling like?
Yeah, I think the way the whole week was driven, especially by Maddie Saunders and Moana, who did a lot of talks around both the Indigenous culture and Moana Pacifica culture, around family and bonds and our deep-rooted history in both cultures and what it's all centered around. And it's funny, like when people ask me how many times we train, we only probably train two times.
For... Oh, we know. We had Torai on every Friday, so we know how much you train.
I find that amazing. Similar when I played for the Barbarians, around when everyone has a common purpose and you're all working towards the same goals that are sort of other than your own individual goals, especially in this case with the Indigenous Pacifica team, was it just felt like you were playing for more than just us. Like we were playing to represent the Indigenous and Pacifica community. We were playing for, I guess, to give the jersey a chance in the future that this wasn't the only game. And we just kept it real simple, game plan. And, yeah, boys were able to play with vigour and toughness and be relentless out on that field. That it shows the power of purpose and the power of a group of men coming together, trying to fight towards, I guess, a common goal that's outside of their own individual selves.
Yeah, Totai Kefa used to say every Friday he would give us an update on the camp and, you know, the things that yous were working on. And I found it funny that, like, after that game, you know, the Wallabies starting to look, play a similar style and go through the front door.
Yeah, absolutely.
Physical. Yeah. So definitely led the way there. When you look at the whole campaign, the camp, the game, you know, what was your favourite moment?
The energy pre-game was, I don't think I've experienced something like that before. There was just so much excitement and passion to represent everyone forever and to represent their own individual culture and then collectively for us to do it again. And it was sort of like I said, it was a big thing was around making sure that this team lasts for longer than just us. And the only way that was going to happen was if a performance was put on the field and to inspire and hopefully another generation of young Pacifica Indigenous kids to want to play for that jersey as well. And then a couple of the nights we had together, learning especially about the Indigenous culture. You know, I play with quite a few Indigenous boys in the Brumbies, but we probably don't talk about it too much. So to learn more about their culture and different things they do in their culture, to show respect to the elders, passing down of gifts, was awesome.
Man, your mum and dad, Mick and Di, they're beautiful people. And I was saying to T off air earlier, like they are the best volunteers. They're rugby family through and through, and it's just rugby's just in their blood. You know, to have them at that game, which was most likely supposed to be your last game, but to have them there, especially in a game like that, yeah, what did that mean to you to have them and just knowing that they've been there and had your back right through your journey?
Yeah, hopefully I did them proud. Like you said, they've been there every step of the way. Like most parents in this country, they drive you to trainings, they early mornings, late nights. They've done a lot and they've experienced a lot of the highs and lows, like you said. So hopefully it was a proud moment, especially for mum being able to represent my nan. She was ecstatic that night. So, yeah, all you can do is try and make them proud, and hopefully that was achieved on that night.
What was she like when she met Tana for the first time? Oh, she met him before.
Yeah, no, that was the first time. She was just trying to get me to introduce me to her. I think eventually she just went up and spoke to him. Apparently she's telling me I used to love him as a player when he was younger. I was like, oh, nice, mum.
Oh, she sounds like my mum.
Yeah,
just
like,
no, just finds a way in all those rooms and gets in front of those people, and then, yep, they end up being that's my
the
mum.
Team manager for the Cook Islands.
I know times have changed since, you know, that final whistle, but when the whistle did blow and, you know, you're having all these emotions thinking it's your last game, did you have that quick moment of reflection or like going, oh, man, that could have been the last game that I ever played professionally?
Yeah, I had it not straight away. I probably had it a few days later, and I was like, I was content if the way sort of that game was, and I guess the passion that I felt and how it was more than just a game for us. It was something bigger for the communities.
Yeah.
I was happy and content that if that was my last game, it was a good way to go out.
Last one for me, being in that campaign, everyone always says when they come out of a campaign like that, even though it's only a short time, it changes you. You know, you feel different, you feel like a sense of connection and belonging. How did that experience, you know, make you a better person and a better footy player?
I think it challenged me to continue to find more about my cultures, especially my Cook Island culture. So to not wait for another opportunity like that game to talk about it more, look into my heritage more, is to be a bit more proactive and go deep dive and find out who you are, find out your roots, your bloodline. So that's probably what it's inspired me to do.
Beautiful.
Nice work, bro. Hey, honestly, I wish you all the best. I can't wait to get out to some of those TARS games and watch you play, be there with your family. And who knows, you'll keep saying one more. Another contract will pop up. One more. Okay, I'll go overseas.
Till the wheels fall off, brother.
Till the wheels fall off.
That's what everyone tells me.
Exactly right. But wish you all the best in the future, man. And thank you so much for joining us on Nijin Footy.
No, thanks for having me, guys.
This season, get your footy fix live and ad-free.
Can you believe it, ladies and gentlemen? It's hammer time!
Every try.
He pins the ears back and he dives over to score in the corner.
And tackle.
What a tackle!
We've got you covered.
That's not a pass. It's a party trick.
NRL. Each weekend.
Bing, bing, bing! Giant set bingo!
ABC Radio Australia. Your home of rugby league in the Pacific.
Hey everyone, Alex Johnson here from the PNG Kumuls, the South Sydney Rabbitohs. You're here with Nijin Footy.
Give me three answers for this one.
We're up, Sammy.
We are up. Well, I'm up.
Nijin Footy you're Mondays. Up to we like to finish the show with our game of categories, 3 points up for grabs each week. It might be about footy and it might be not, but the loser has to shout the other host and their partner a spa day dinner. The works. The score is 29 all.
Ooh,
I got 2 points
all
back because Will covered two for me or two for you. You have to go again, so I'll be answering
so
your questions.
So they're my second week in a row. And we still need to get our tattoo done. I've been ringing around. Our tattoo artists have gone missing.
Nah, it's coming. It will come.
It's coming. I might have to just get, you know how to do it. Just do the old school one.
Nah,
you want to tattoo me?
That.
I'll tattoo you.
If I'm in Cook Islands and I don't have that tattoo, I'll be returning back with a Nijin Footy tattoo.
Well, it looks like I have to get
Clive
to the,
Nicholas.
I have to come to the Cook,
to the
Islands.
Cook Islands.
Okay, that sounds like a date. We're going together to get a tattoo, but let's go. What did I say the theme was for Gimme Three?
I mentioned
around.
Artie.
Yep, 100th. Just think of that, 100th cap for the All Blacks. So
yep.
Here we go. This is my Gimme Three. Give me the other three Samoans who have also got 100 caps for the All Blacks. Give me the other three. So there's four in total. It's pretty impressive.
Kevin Mialamu?
That is number one. Perfect. There's one. You've got this.
Is Manonu Samoan?
He is Samoan.
Or is he Tongan?
No, he is Samoan.
But is he didn't play 100? Oh, okay. Let me have a think about this. We need some Samoan All Blacks, and we need them legends out here right now in my mind. Who do we have?
I love the process that you're going through here,
oh,
T.
Oh, man.
Plenty of Samoans have played
for
the All Blacks. Some goats out there.
Oh, actually. I just had a mind blank.
Oh, come on.
Oh, no.
Describe him. What does he look like in your head?
It's my mum's player, and we've had him here on Nijin Footy. The Sir
Michael Jones.
He's
the
Samoan.
Iceman? He's Samoan?
Well, you just gave it away, so maybe it's not. He didn't play 100 games.
Oh, it's just.
So you wanted me to lock it in, so I won't go there. You silly person.
Damn it. I'm going to stop now. I'm going to stop talking.
You silly person. All right, we're going to.
Another Sir.
Ma Nonu. Did he play 100? Ma Nonu.
You've got one though, Kevin Mialamu. That was the one I thought you wouldn't have got.
Wouldn't have got.
Yeah, just because he's a hooker, like a forward, maybe you wouldn't have known. But
did Julian play 100?
Well, that's a good question.
Nah, he didn't. He wouldn't have. Man, this is a hard one, eh? All right, I'll lock in Ma Nonu.
Bang, that's number two.
Oh,
yes, I was waiting. I was like, wow. Just lock it in already, man. That's two. That's good.
All right. Is the third one hard?
No, not really, but yes, maybe. He's a commentator now, if that gives you a clue.
Oh, no. I was about to say Sonny Bill Williams.
No, he didn't play 100.
Is he the guy? Nah, not that guy.
Played fullback.
Fullback?
Mainly a fullback.
Nah. Going to go with...
Just give me someone. Running out of time here.
Yeah, I know. What's the other... Julian Savia.
That's a negative. It was actually Mills Muliaina.
Oh, Mills.
Mills, big Mills. So, mate, not bad, my friend. Not bad. 2 out of 3. Well done. So that wasn't that bad, that question. But that is our time up. Tell your footy-loving friends about Nisian Footy. Find it wherever you get your podcasts or on the ABC Pacific website. And thank you for joining us. Ka kite. Like you said.
Ka kite. We'll see you on Friday. This show was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation.